Accession number 1046, so Reel 1.
Mr. Palmer, Reel 1. Can you tell me whereabouts you were born, Mr. Palmer, and where you come from?
I was born in Exeter, at Topsham, Exeter.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a painter and decorator.
And can you tell me about where you went to school?
I went to the Topsham School.
And how old were you when you left?
I was 14 years.
What job did you take up then?
I was worked in a nursery for a while. And then I went into a cinema to work. And then I I left the cinema and I went to unemployment at the time, and I got fed up with the queuing up, and I mean it was only eight shillings a week, and I had to walk 8 miles more or less because I couldn't afford a bus fare back and forward. So I joined the Dempster Regiment for 2 shillings a day January the 30th, 1932.
So you really joined up because of the unemployment?
That's really, yes, yeah.
How did you find the initial training?
Well, not really hard, you see, because I joined the Boys' Brigade, you see, and I learnt all this, more or less the early training, you see, and discipline, you see. And my folk were very disciplined, I was brought up, army discipline was nothing to me.
But in the initial training, did the NCOs treat you roughly or not?
No, I never got treated, I got shouted at. I mean, I was used to, as a lad, being shouted at, and so I didn't take any notice, you see. And I had a very strict schoolmaster as well, and more or less, I used to go in one ear and out the other. So I was quite well disciplined before I went in.
So the shouting didn't upset
No, it didn't upset me whatsoever.
Did you find the training easy or difficult?
No, not at all. I mean, was one of the NCO was a corporal. It was a Corporal Coveney, who was at the time. He was one of our instructors, and he kept asking me where I learnt the 4 and 4s. Well, I learnt all this 4 and 4s in the Boys' Brigade. No, so it was nothing hard. I mean, I anchored down to. I made up my mind that I was going to make an effort at this, and. I never felt it hard. I enjoyed it, really.
Now, let's jump right ahead to the war. When the war broke out, how did you react? Were you upset or apprehensive or looking forward to it?
No, I'd just come home March 1939 from India, and I'd just served a seven-year stint with the 1st Battalion, the Dempster Regiment. And I wasn't upset because I thought to myself, well, I'm only completing a contract because I signed for 7 and 5, you see, 12 years. And no, I never felt it that way at all.
So your 7 years were up before the war broke out?
Oh, yes, and I was transferred to the Army Reserve, you see. And I never drew a complete quarter because on August the 30th I was up again. And by the 3rd of September, I was on the way to the BEF. Not as a unit, but as a a company from company of reservists attached to the Royal Army Ordnance Corps for ammunition duties, and with a company of Somersets, which formed at that time the 20th Company of the Auxiliary Military Pioneer Corps, which is now the Royal Pioneer Corps.
So did you do pioneer work?
No, just on ammunition duty, yes, and guards and that.
So you were guarding
them? I was, no, we weren't, we used to help we attached the Royal Army Ordnance Corps, and we used to do all these in the forest, and there was a place called Le Garve, it was done in south of, well down south of France, down near the Nantes area. And we were in this Fort Le Garve. And we used to unload ammunition and load it on trucks and to send it up the line, you see. And that we did that until we evacuated. And then we were skirmishing all over the place because we could hear the guns, the German advance coming nearer and nearer. And we came out at Saint-Nazaire, out of the same dock where the commando raided.
Did you do any fighting in France at that
time? None whatsoever. None, no.
How did you get on with the French civilians?
Oh, fairly well, yes, fairly well. Because we were right in the country. We had nothing to do with the people in the town. We were... It was actually at a rail edge, you see. Yeah, and in a village.
But were the French friendly to you or hostile?
Oh, no, not so whatsoever. No, they weren't, no. In fact, I had a nice old couple who used to do my washing. And for a few francs. And we were got on very well.
So the French were friendly to you, weren't
they? Well, they were at that then, you see.
What about when the Germans invaded? Were the French still friendly?
Yeah, well, yes. When we contacted them, you see, when we got in the field, we didn't. We were more or less withdrawing all the time. And we had to foot slug it because all the vehicles were all like they come. In the beginning of the war, they used to, there was a short of transport and that. They had a lot of these civilian lorries. We used to work on these ammunition dumps and that. And of course, that all got left behind. It was like commandeered stuff during the war.
Requisition,
yeah.
Did you see much of French refugees on the roads once the Germans attacked?
No.
So, who was in command of your unit? Can you remember who was in charge of you at?
I can't remember the. There was a colonel in charge of us, and an old sergeant major. Which was in India with me, so Sergeant Major Garrett, some time ago he passed on.
What rank did you hold then?
Oh, private. I was a private all the time. I was quite satisfied with my rank.
Did you have the opportunity to get higher rank?
Well, I could have if I managed to push myself, but I was, so providing I was ably led, I was quite satisfied, and I was getting a good rate of pay, you see.
So you said that you had to move from Le Gave to escape to Saint-Nazaire.
Yeah, Saint-Nazaire, yeah.
Did you get from Le Gave to Saint-Nazaire?
Oh, we went part by the lorry, and then they dumped the lorry and put it up as a road barrier to try to stop anything used to flood it up. And then we had to foot slug it all the way. We came out with all of our equipment. We never threw our equipment or left it behind or anything like that. We had what we was issued when we went to France first.
Were you under attack from the Germans?
No. Only aero attack, and they were up. I think they were mostly reconnaissance stuff over that particular area.
So you weren't dive bombed?
No. There was a lot of our fellows, we got split up or something. They went up the line with some ammunition and they got split up. And they were on the Lancastre, which got put down at Saint-Nazaire. And that ship went down a couple of days before we got there. We came out on a coal boat. I don't know the name, but we were washing every 5 minutes. She was unloading coal, and we had a bit of a job to get out of the harbour. That's when we had a bit of a resistance there with the French port authorities, but we got out in the end. Because there was, I remember, a destroyer anchored, or one of our destroyers anchored off the port at the time. So we came out. When we were on the board, we were a motley crowd. We had a couple of Beaufort guns on the deck, and And there were some French and Poles and that.
Was it a British ship or a French ship?
I think she was a British ship. I can't remember her name. But it took us 3 days to get to Plymouth because we'd come through the bay, you see, basically.
Who was stopping you getting out of Saint-Nazaire?
Well, I understood. I mean, maybe just rumour, you see. But we understood that the dock authorities were being a bit awkward.
Do you know why they were being awkward?
No, I didn't. I know.
How long were you held up in Saint-Nazaire?
Oh, we weren't... about half a day, it wasn't, as far as I can remember anyway.
And you said that there were Poles, French and British on
the ship. Oh, yes, there was a lot of French here.
Apart from your unit, do you remember which British units were aboard the ship?
No, there was all sorts, artillery and everything, you see.
Infantry?
Yeah, infantry, because we were infantry, you see.
What condition were they in?
We were all pretty well in good condition, I mean, as far as I can remember at the time.
Had any of the troops on board the ship done any fighting against the Germans?
That I don't know. That I don't know, I couldn't say.
So, the whole of your unit must have had no casualties then?
No, not as far as I knew. Because the Army Ordnance Corps, Royal Army Ordnance Corps personnel, which was we were with, came out at the same time. And we met them passing through in transit in England. We met them at a station or somewhere, around Basingstoke or somewhere like that. Because we landed at Plymouth, you see, on the 18th of June.
Were there any German attacks on Saint-Nazaire whilst you were there?
No. Only, like I say, eye-level reconnaissance stuff, bombers. There was nothing dropped on us.
You mentioned the sinking of the Lancastria just before you got there.
Yeah.
Did you see anything of any survivors from
No. I only met a passing through. When we got to England, we met one. He came from Wiltshire.
He'd been on the Lancaster.
He was on the Lancaster the day before, and he said the bomb went down through the, according to his account, it went down through the funnel.
So, was that the first you'd heard of the sinking of the Lancaster?
That was the first time. That was the first time, you see.
So, in Saint-Nazaire itself, you hadn't heard of the Lancaster?
No. See, I only had it for second hand.
And you believed this chap, did you?
Oh, yes, because he was a boarder. He was down below, and he went up on top deck, and he got away. Because I think, according to what he said, there was quite a few went down with the ship.
So once you got back to Britain in June 1940,
yes.
What unit did you join then?
Oh, when we landed at Plymouth, we went to... it was Earl's Court, and there was a lot of, old people there, and they just were like transats, and we didn't know where we were going. So we hung around there for about a day, and then we marched down to this railway station. The next minute I knew, I was going into Butlin's holiday camp at Clacton-on-Sea, and it's like more or less a refit camp, or just to... get things straight. So then we went back to Exeter. We went back to Exeter and at the depot. And was there for a while. I went on leave. And in the meantime, when I got home, I'd found out that my wife had received a missing report from me from the 1st of June. Well, that's when we left, when we started to move out. That was on me, let me see, that would be my 29th birthday.
When you left Le Gave?
Well, yeah, I was missing from the 1st of June. And we went to Clacton and went back to the depot, and we'd done a little odd... odd jobs, and like digging defences around the area, the Clisenberry area and around that area. And then on that was arrived on the 18th of June, and by the 18th of July, I was sailing to Malta, which I suppose that's understood that we were going to going to rejoin the unit at Malta, you see. And I went via the Cape.
What was the voyage like?
Oh, she was a pretty fast ship, and she was called the Yorba, the Reno del Pacifico. She was she came from the South Pacific line. And we went round the Cape. We called in Freetown for a refuel and that. And then we went round to Cape Town. And we went ashore there for a while. It was quite a pleasant 3 days we had in port there. And then we went up through to Durban and went ashore there. And had a couple of days there. And then we went up through Madagascar and into Port Tufik.
Canal.
Yes, into the canal zone. And we landed up with the... must have been a transit camp for the guards. A place called Denifa. It was down just below Ismailia in the Bitter Lakes there. And I think we was there about 3 weeks, month. I can't quite...
So, on this voyage, you hadn't come across any enemy action?
No. We had no enemy action whatsoever. Not on this voyage.
Were you in a big convoy?
No, we were on our own. She was very fast. The only time we saw any escort, we were just off Cape Town. This ship must have been going into that port in South Africa.
Cape Town?
No. Where they do see, we said it.
Salmonstown.
We're going to Salmonstown. And she was an aircraft carrier, and her bow seemed to be stowed in. Whether where she met it, but she escorted us for a while, and then she went off to Salmonstown. And we come. But all the way, most of the voyage, as far as I never saw any escort whatsoever. She was very fast. But we nicknamed her the Altmark, because at night they used to clamp us down, you see, in the hold. And we nicknamed her the Altmark. But this, I noticed on the bridge, there was RAF wings on it. And most of the drafts on here were sergeant rail gunners. And I've often thought many a time, what happened after them lads? Because they weren't very old, they were 19, I mean, very young chaps. She was actually an RAF ship. And
did the ship have any guns itself?
Yes, I think she did. She must have had it rare. I never. We were kept one section, and the army, I mean, we were more or less segregated. We had to fight to ever do your washing and shaving and that. They always, RAFs always seemed to beat us to it. We had to wait. Yeah, it was a bit of a scramble.
What was the relationship between the army and the RAF?
All right.
Was it friendly?
It was nothing.
Were you rivals?
No, we're not. And then we went up there from... We stayed with the guards for about 3 weeks, I think. And then a draft had left England to join the unit in Malta. We caught us up at Geneva, and we went from there to Alexandria. We were in Cassanio Barracks. We were there about a couple of nights, and then we embarked on the HMS Gloucester, because the Eastern Fleet at that time, unknown to us, was supposed to be sailing to try to contact the Italian fleet. And in the process, when we got a few miles out, we had a raid from the, and we got bombed at sea
by the Italian Air Force.
Yes, and they did bring one down. And in that,
did you see the plane brought down?
I saw the plane dive into the sea, because the bombs were that close. It was It was like they called it a backdraft, you know, and when they come close, the like a blast used to blow you along the deck. And I went, once I went down and flying, because this on the Gloucester, there was a lot of Naval Reserve personnel, and I know one saying to me, he said, "Where do you think you're going, Tommy?" I was flying along the draft that blew me up against the ship.
From the blast, from the
bombs. And then we arrived at Malta, it was at night, and we arrived there at night, and they were sorting us out which company. I went, so I don't know where it was. I didn't know where I was going, to be which company we're in. Well, I happened to land up with the B company, and they were at a place in Malta called Burzabugia. It's just off Califrana. Well, I got a posted to a beach post in B company, and
a beach post.
It's a beach post, you know, got like there used to be these gun posts along the coast, and we had an American company, the sergeant major in charge, which is now since passed on, Sergeant Major Reggie Bollum. He had quite a few, he had a few decorations in him and whatnot, and he was quite a, I knew him in India as a corporal. And we went in this, we in this beach post, and they had these like little, where the bunks, the sleeping quarters were up, and one up and one down, you know, in two tiers. And in, that was one, that's the sleeping quarters. But the, where the beach was pointed, it was in there, was a machine gun. It was a machine gun and what they call a lion's light for, you know, illumination, the, in case of any attack or anything like that. And then I was there for a while, and then I went down to Burzabugia on another post, and that was a funny place. I thought it was rather amusing, where the stickers were outside one of these pubs, this gun post was, you see. And it was named the Smiling Prince. And then from there, I was there.
Smiling Prince was the name.
That was the name of the this cafe. Or, you know, it's just
the actual proper name.
Yeah, yeah, the Smiling Prince was the name. And I know the landlord. It was, his name was Joseph Clooney. That's what he. That was the landlord. Like
he was man, Maltese.
He's Maltese man. Yeah. And afterwards, we went up on the H post. What they call H post. These was near the aerodrome. At the as a fighter base and naval air arm base, LFAR, and we were on the boat post for a while there,
and so you were supposed to be guarding.
That's right. That's right.
Against a possible German.
That's right. Yeah, we couldn't do nothing else. You see, I mean, we're infantry.
What dates did you arrive in Malta? Do you know? Approximately?
Around about September, I think.
September 1940?
I think, yeah. I think so.
You said you were in B Company.
That's right, yeah.
Do you remember the name of your, the number of your platoon?
I believe it was 8 platoon, I think.
And who was in charge of 8 platoon?
Sergeant Major Bollum. And then Sergeant Major Bollum was in charge of that one. And there was one sergeant called, he got killed in Sicily, Lance Sergeant Ray Collett, I think his name is.
Who's in charge of the company?
Captain Bembo. Captain, I can't think of his Christian name now. No, I can't think of his Christian name.
No, it doesn't matter. And what type of arms did you have on Malta, your unit?
Oh, we only just had the arms. There was what do you mean, as the unit, you mean?
Yes.
Well, there was a rifle companies. They had all the, like, bring guns and that. And your defence, was to Twin Lewis's. On a, even then, it was the old Twin Lewis. And there was a carrier platoon. They were all little Bengal carriers. And then there was the 3-inch mortars, which eventually, that's who I finished up with, the 3-inch mortar. I was transferred from B Company to Tarshin, to the Bataan HQ.
So at first you were a rifleman?
Rifleman, yeah.
And then you were transferred to the mortars?
The mortars, yeah.
What job did you do on the mortars?
I was the number two, you see. Number two on the mortar.
What does the number two do on the mortar?
Well, I feed the bombs on down the mortar.
You drop them in?
Yeah, and watch help me number one with the, get the bubbles and that, you know, the elevation and that, no.
How did you get on with the Maltese people in Malta?
Oh, very well. Yeah, very well. Yeah. Very well, very... Because, I mean, we'd been out there quite a... As a nation, we've been Malta quite a few years. I mean, after the invasion of the different bodies.
So were they always friendly?
Oh, yeah, very friendly, yeah. Yes, very friendly, yeah. Yeah, I found them very friendly.
Did any of the troops misbehave on Malta?
Well, I mean, you get the occasional one... I mean, you go out on the... probably go the night out, you see, in Valletta. Come back a bit... a bit road rush, you know. After a few jugs of beer. Otherwise, we had no trouble, really. I never knew any trouble, not serious trouble.
So they didn't do any damage, or...?
Oh, no.
Was there any interference with the women?
No, not whatsoever, no.
So they didn't have problems with VD or anything like that?
Not that I know of, no. I mean, they automatically lose their propensity to pay the loser. They had a lot to lose. And so, no, I never knew anything like that.
Did your officers warn you about how to behave on Malta?
No.
Did they give you any instructions about how you should behave?
No, nothing at all. We're a regular unit, you see, and we were disciplined well.
So,
things had never come across. I mean, I never heard of anything, you see. There may have been a bit going on, but I don't know.
So you're.